Do you know where I think quiet quitting started? In the church.
Yeah.
There's all kinds of people that hold to a form of godliness but deny its power. They go to church, they just don't do the work that they were created in Christ Jesus for. But there's going to be a day when you give an account before the Lord, and it's not going to go well with you there.
This quiet quitting discourse is hilarious because it's just boomers and conservatives getting upset by healthy work-life balance.
Recently, there's been a lot of post-pandemic, a lot of transition in the workforce. And I see it as somebody who's had the pleasure of having to start a few companies in the last year.
And look at you, man.
And hiring, you know, we're started a management company. We're hiring a lot of people to work on sites. And this is extremely high turnover. I mean, people that we're trying to run businesses with that are just leaving when the second they're dissatisfied. Mm-hmm. And I think there's this phenomenon called quiet quitting. You know, I just looked up 50 million people have quit their job in the last 2 years following the pandemic, citing pressure.
Well, that would be the loud quitting though, right? That 50 million that have quit.
Yeah, that's true.
Clear
that's true.
Quitting.
Yep. Yeah. Citing pressure such as burnout, dissatisfaction, different needs that weren't being met. And so
this term quiet quitting is different. Quiet quitting is you keep your job, you keep your paycheck, you just don't do your job.
Right.
Right.
So the question I think that would be really helpful, because you're a guy who started multiple companies and led an organization of 300 plus employees. And so how did you, and one of the best things about that place was there was a lot of really solid leaders, like guys who it's like, hey man, you should probably go somewhere else and start your own thing. So how did you keep those people? How'd you develop them? Like speaking to leader, and I'm not saying me, but like the leaders watching this, how can you develop your staff team? How do you help them avoid these quiet quitting things?
Yeah. Well, I think the most important job, if you talk to people that are starting companies, they'll tell you that the CEO or the founder of a company's got three primary jobs, right? And the first one's don't run out of money. The second one's don't run out of money. And the third one's don't run out of money. Okay. That's the old saying in Silicon Valley and around any entrepreneurial setting, because if you don't have money, you can't have a company. You're not going to exist.
Yeah.
Okay. But I will tell you, as a CEO, the most important thing that you can do is hire. Okay. It's who you surround yourself with. I mean, the companion of fools will suffer harm. Right? He walks with wise men will be wise. You know, if you are around a sluggard, I mean, you've got nothing but trouble. Proverbs warns you again and again of being around people who don't have any kind of work ethic. The precious possession, my gosh, a verse I quoted to my sons, you and your brothers and others, again and again, the precious possession of a man is diligence. And we have so many men who lack the integrity to be self-motivated to see purpose in their work instead of finding purpose from their work. Right. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
Okay. And so, you know, Paul, when he's writing to the Colossians, he says two things. And in verse 17, he says, whatever you do, right? Whether it's in word or deed, do your work heartily. He says, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Okay. And then I think in 23 is when he says, whatever you do, do everything heartily to the Lord. So whether it's word or deed, you take those two verses together, it ought to be with all your heart, knowing, and this is what he says, that the Lord will be the one who gives you your reward. Your reward is not going to be in your paycheck. Mm-hmm. Your reward is going to be that God's going to say to you, well done, good and faithful servant. It drives me crazy when I see people who maybe come to faith later in life who then are disinterested in their work.
And because they want to...
Yeah, the old phrase is, you're so heavenly minded, you're no earthly good. That's impossible.
Right.
If you set your mind to the things above and not the things on the earth, you will be more effective on the way that you live and are employed, you know, and that you work on earth. Because God tells us that the best Christians are the best servants, okay? The best bosses are Christian bosses because they're not looking to exploit their workers. They're trying to maximize their potential and to help organize their life in a way that will be a blessing to them and to others.
Yeah.
And so those bosses give them meaning and purpose in their jobs and don't just kind of use them as hourly workers or day laborers or people that just churn through so they can get what they want. I mean, capitalism and money making is not their goal. Their goal is the stewardship of that human life.
Right.
So the most important thing you can do as a CEO or as a leader is hire well.
Yeah.
And so, because there's two ways to get great employees, right? You either develop them, okay, or you select people that are excellent already. Now, everybody needs to continually be developed.
Yeah.
Okay. But there is, but you're going to get be way ahead of the game if you hire people that already come to the job with purpose and meaning, as opposed to, hey, will you validate me because you either pay me enough so I can make enough money so I can be happy, or will you give me a job that people think are a big deal so they think I'm a big deal? Mm-hmm. Those people, the second they don't think their job is giving them what they want, they're going to abandon that job because mm-hmm. they're going to abandon that God and they're going to look for something else, okay, to fill their little cup. But Christians aren't looking for something to fill their cup. They don't exist to fill their bank account. They exist to be faithful, okay? And they exist to bring meaning and purpose to their work. This is what's called the Protestant work ethic, okay? I mean, I like to talk about a statement that I wish was original to me, but it's not. I think it's my friends up there at Faith at Work, those guys. I think a guy named Tom Nelson, not the pastor, Tommy Nelson in Denton, that I highly commend to you. But a guy named Tom Nelson, I think Tom's the one who said that the work of the church is the church at work. Mm. And Colossians 3:17 says, whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord. Specifically, the way you do that, you're giving thanks through him in God the Father. And specifically, the way you give thanks that God has given you life and meaning and purpose is you live your life with meaning and purpose. Okay. And Martin Luther's the one who famously said that the Christian cobbler doesn't glorify God by making shoes that he carves a cross into. Mm-hmm. He glorifies God by making excellent shoes.
Yeah.
Okay. So all that to say is there's a lot of people that, Coop, I think this quiet quitting is people that are like, hey, this job isn't giving me what I want this job to give me. Well, you're supposed to give yourself to your job,
yeah.
Not have your job give something to you.
Okay, so now that I think that's really good. Two things I think of is like when I look at it, I'm like, okay, quiet quitting is a problem. I think if you're staying, I've heard it said to my generation, like if you're scrolling on Instagram or Twitter or TikTok or whatever, you're stealing from your employer, right? So would you endorse that statement? And that's pretty on the nose for the statement, but. Reason I ask is because there's also this whole other movement and probably coming from back from my generation of like, you don't own me. I'm not stealing anything from you. I have a life. And I feel like there's a balance because a lot of your work philosophy from working with you isn't, hey, you need to be here from
let's get 8 the job
to
done.
5 p.m. It's right. Get the job done.
It's get the job done.
So no. If I'm out here for 20 minutes on Instagram, which would be a long time, but like, let's say I get on Instagram for 5 minutes and kind of look through, that has nothing to do with work.
Well, it doesn't because of your work. Okay. I mean, because, your job, you're meeting with investors, you're scouting out new properties, you're putting together performers, you're putting together pitch decks, you're managing folks that you're hiring. Okay. And so, sometimes you're setting appointments, you're driving to appointments and you get to appointments early. And so if you got 20 minutes to scroll through Instagram, that's fine.
But I'm doing this during work.
But your job is data entry. Okay. Then that 20 minutes you don't enter data, you're not doing your job. If your job is pumping gas, if your job is digging a ditch, if your job is as an actuary, figuring things and they're paying you to do 8 hours of figuring.
Yeah.
Okay. Then when you stop doing that, then you are not doing your job.
Yeah.
Right.
So those are pretty hard jobs to hide in though. I think the quiet quitting phenomenon, if I'm just looking into it, reading one layer below the definition, I would guess it's more in jobs like mine where there's a little bit of flexibility, and where you're just really cutting corners because there's not these really firm, hey, if you don't have 1,000 contacts entered by the end of the week, we know you didn't do your job because that's very feasible. Right. So I'm more talking about like in the more flexible work culture, which is a lot of jobs now.
So the flexible work culture, what you're really saying is we've got a lot of employees who are planning to do a lot of work they don't really need to be paid to do.
Right.
So I would say that that's not quiet quitting. I would say that's stupid hiring.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I think that's fair. So
if somebody can work 3 hours out of an 8 hour day that you're paying them and they're not giving you 8 hours of value, because like, listen, there's some people, I wouldn't say your value is that you work 8 hours. Your value is that you bring value to your job.
Right.
So let's just use a silly example. Let's use sports. So how many hours a week, okay, does a really gifted athlete have to work to help that team win.
Right.
And you might go, oh, Todd, you don't know. They work out. They take care of their body. They go to a trainer. They sit in offensive meetings. They watch film. They practice with the other guys. I'm like, okay, great. That's all nice. End of the day, you're right. Those are things that professional athletes do throughout their entire week. But at the end of the day, I don't care if they do all those things. If they don't perform on Sunday, it's what Al Iverson famously said. You talking about practice, man. You know, I've practiced my whole life.
Well, like there's guys like Tyreek Hill, which I'm sure he works his butt off, but he's a freak.
Yeah. We know he is a freak.
And he's, he'll play Fortnite for hours.
So, let me say this. If his product, and you can make the case that their productivity will go down if they do all those other things I just mentioned earlier. But I guarantee you, if you ask Jerry Jones, right, if Dak Prescott never went to practice and did anything, and he passed for 375 yards a week, 3 touchdowns, no interceptions, and the offense worked well, would you care? He'd go, no.
Right.
He wouldn't care. Now, someone might say, well, you can never do that. And I would make the case that that largely is true.
But somebody who did something else maybe in the past that has relationships that goes, you need to raise $10 million, and they can do it in a phone call.
Yes.
And they do it. And yes, that was supposed to take them a month. Then you don't care what they do for the next 28 days.
No, because their job was to get raised $10 million.
Right.
If they did it in 5 minutes, they get paid the exact same way if they have to work for $1 million. Like, there's a famous story of a guy who walked in. There was a machine that was not working very well. Right. And no one could figure out what the problem was. And this guy walked in, after 5 minutes, he just said, does anybody have a piece of chalk? Right. And they go, yeah. And took it and he just put an X and he walked away. They go, what are you doing? He goes, that's your problem right there. And they go, that's amazing. And they saw that was where the problem was. And they go, how much do we owe? He goes, $10,000. They go, $10,000. You were here for 4 minutes and you put an X. He goes, the $10,000 is not for the X. The $10,000 is for knowing where to put the X. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so it's kind of what you're saying.
That's a good analogy.
It's like, I know where to put the X.
Right.
And that's what you're paying for. It's a life of learning that allowed me to deliver in that moment. And so, you know, some people might say like, gosh, why in the world were we going to pay that guy? I mean, it's crazy what certain people get paid to go speak. Sometimes $100,000.
Yeah.
Well,
which you're more than happy to go do for $100,000.
Yeah, if I'm available, if I can work it in, right? But my point is that, you know, you're not paying that guy for that 1 hour that he spoke. You're paying that guy for his life experience to come and be shared with you for that hour. I still think it's stupid to pay him $100,000.
Right.
But
you're open to it.
I'm open to it. But my point is that.
But those, okay, so I think now that's an exceptional employee, actually. That's a great hire because you hired a guy who can maximize his talents and get the job done. Quiet quitting is Google saying when employees continue to put the minimum of work in their jobs, but don't go the extra mile for their employer. And as now you're like, okay, that may be, maybe we need to speak to that person who doesn't have the right understanding of work, which I think you did a little bit with Kim Moore. That's more now to the employer. Fire those people.
You're enabling them.
I mean, I remember you said like the death of most good corporations are when you keep bad people. You move somebody who's bad at this job into a new corner.
Especially in the church,
yeah,
is that people would, you know, the church is like, well, we can't fire that person.
Let's just move them to
because yep, we're a family. So we're gonna hire folks around them and further burden the body because you know this person is not really doing their job. And what I would just say, hey, listen, that person's valuable. Okay, they were created for a purpose. If they're not fulfilling their purpose, the most awful thing we can do is keep them in a job where they're not performing well. And by the way, my church staff, I would just say, listen, the church is a family, okay? But the staff is a team, okay? So we're going to love you as a family member. And part of the way we love you as a family member is we don't enable you. We don't look past your lack of performance and your unfaithfulness. And so we're going to have hard conversations about that. We're going to give you a map to success. We're going to make sure you have all the resources, the training and development that you need. Okay, but if you're not going to do your job because you're not motivated, and again, it goes back to Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord and not for men. And when you hire people that aren't motivated by men or by the Lord, right? Because, you know, that verse goes on to say, knowing that from the Lord you will receive, you know, the reward of the inheritance of what? Of being faithful. Okay, it says in Colossians 3:23, it's Christ whom you serve. You don't serve money, you don't serve career advancement, okay? You don't serve men, you serve Christ. And being faithful, right, is what faithful men do.
Right.
Your yes is yes and your no is no. Now look, people would say, well, Todd, there is a shortage of faithful men out there. I'm like, okay, yeah, there is. And that's why only the best bosses get them.
Well, yeah, there is and there isn't. I'm like, the more that I kind of getting into doing stuff with you and trying to connect with other faith, I'm like, there's a lot of them out there. There really are. You just have to be one of them to get to know the other ones.
And you know why most men aren't great at work? Because they don't get asked to be great at work. You know why most men aren't great in marriage? Because their wives don't ask them to be. They don't complete them. That's what a great wife is. She goes, Cooper, this is what Logan would say to you. Cooper, I know who you are. You want to be God's man. You want to love me as Christ loved the church. You want to do excellent in this home. I'm not firing you, right? A wife can't fire her husband, but she's going to, I'm going to do everything I can to motivate you to be God's man. I'm going to remind you who you are. I'm going to widen the circle so that other godly men can come alongside of you and talk to you about areas that you can excel still more.
Yeah.
And because we want you to be successful in that job that you are going to be given account for. Sure. That's the exact same way. Now, I don't make a covenant with my employees. I'm like, hey, here's the covenant. There's a work covenant here. You're going to do the work or the covenant's broken. Whereas there is an unconditional covenant commitment made between you and Logan, all right? There's a conditional covenant made between employer and employee. And what the employer's job is to treat you with honor, is a workman is worthy of his wages, right? I'm not going to muzzle the ox while he's threshing. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to exploit you for my own personal gain. I'm not going to use my position of power to make you do things that are best for me and not for you. Okay. I'm going to put you in a job that you're suited for. I'm going to give you training and resources. I'm going to give you opportunity for advancement and make a real contribution to this company. And your job is to say, I'm going to do everything as if you were, as if Christ was my boss. I'm going to be excellent at everything. I'm going to get better at what I do. I'm going to let my yes be yes and my no be no. I'm going to fulfill the work that you've asked me to do. Mm-hmm. That's reasonable without having to compromise on what I'm here to do.
Right.
Yeah, as a man, right?
Yeah, I think like that's really good. I mean, I think because I you can go a lot of ways with it, and quiet quitting is not talking about, hey, work until 9 p.m. for your boss. I mean, we're talking now to the Christian, right? Like you, that what you just talked to. It's like, man, you got to have a work-life balance. You got to love your family first, yeah. Whether especially married people with kids. Like I think that when you're single, there's a little more flexibility to go above and beyond for your boss, and you hopefully get compensated for that.
Do you know where I think quiet quitting started?
I mean,
in the church.
Yeah.
I really mean that. Okay.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like, what I mean by that is there's all kinds of people that still hold to a form of godliness, but deny its power. They go to church. They just don't,
impact their lives.
Do the work that they were created in Christ Jesus for. They're not walking in obedience. They're not walking worthy of the calling with which they've been called. And they're just chill.
Yeah.
Right. And they give lip service to being a member of God's community. And when they give lip service to be a member of God's family, they give lip service to being an employee of, Procter & Gamble and said law firm, and said they get away with whatever they can get away with. They don't take seriously what is, that which they're commanded to. So what I will tell you is that you might get away with that with some company that is willing to overpay you and give you 8 hours of salary for 3 hours worth of effort and work. But there's going to be a day when you give an account before the Lord, and it's not going to go well with you there. When he's going to say, because you know what another word for quiet quitting is in Scripture? Quitting. And you might fool your employer and come up with different ways, to track your movement in front of your little screen there. I know all these people work at home and somehow the company knows if you're logged in or all this different stuff.
Yeah, like a mouse that just continues to move. When
I don't know.
Yeah, that's a real thing.
Is it really?
Oh yeah. You can literally, if you're work from home, you can just have a mouse that will just go in a circle. So it looks like you're working.
Yeah. So guess what? Your employee can be fooled. You know who can't? God is not mocked.
Yeah.
And a man will reap what he sows. And so quiet quitters are quitters on Colossians 3. They're quitters on Christ.
Yeah.
And the reason that we have a country that's filled with these kind of people is because we have a country that is increasingly not filled with a faithful church who gives men truth and meaning and purpose and clarity about what it means to be a man and to be excellent in what you do, because excellence honors God and inspires others.
Yeah.
And so whatever you do in word or deed, you ought to be about it. You ought to do all for the name of the Lord Jesus.
All right, so there's this guy.
And people ought to give thanks for you because you are a believer. I should never hear an employer say, you know who doesn't do a good job at my work because they're all got to run off, do their church work, as Christians. They should say, you know who I'm going to hire? Christians. Because when they're here, they're all here.
Yep. Which is, I think that's That's really good. So now that was to the employee, to the quiet quitter. There's two tweets I want to read you, both by a guy named Nick Huber, who I like. He's been a pretty successful like self-storage real estate guy, really big on Twitter, started a lot of companies, and he has a lot of good, I don't know if he's a believer. He's got a lot of really good principles. Two tweets similar. He goes, because this goes to the question, if you look at resumes right now, it's like 1 year here, 1 year there, 1 year here, 10 months there, maybe 2 years here. Unless like, I mean, we just hired a lady out there who's in her upper 70s. And she's 40 years at one company. That's yeah. Like, you don't see that anywhere anymore. Like, she took some time off, now back to work. This guy says, the job of a business owner, when you're playing the game at a high level, chase down top talent. You're constantly on the lookout for 10X employees and working to sell them on your vision, your company opportunity you have. It's a ton of work for one main reason. All the best talent has a job. Now transferring to another tweet.
Wait, just stop. He said exactly what I said.
Yeah.
The most important thing that an employer can do is hire well.
Yep.
And what kind of person do you want to hire? Right? You want to hire 10X people. You want to hire gifted people. And gifted people are already working somewhere else. And it's your vision. Okay. It's selling them on your purpose and saying, come join me.
Yeah.
I want to tell you that the reason a lot of companies can't get good employees is because they don't have a compelling reason for their employees to be there. I don't care. Like if you're at McDonald's, okay, if all the vision that you can give people is you come here and we're going to give you minimum wage, that's not a compelling life.
Right.
But hey, I'm going to teach you skills. I mean, yeah, and I'm not talking about how to fry fries and how to flip burgers, right? I'm going to talk about how to arrive on time, be faithful, be excellent, and you're going to get promoted. And I'm going to put you into management. I'm going to help you get a McDonald's one day. I'm going to give you a vision for how your life can move forward. Not I'm going to pay you whatever minimum wage is these days, whether it's $9 an hour or $17 an hour. That's not a compelling vision.
Right.
Okay. A compelling vision is exactly what that guy just said. You're going to come here. I'm going to build into you. I'm going to make you better. I'm going to let you be a part of something bigger than yourself. And you're going to be a blessing to people. And this is going to be the best McDonald's on the face of the earth. And people are going to come here, even when they, you know, go watch, what was that movie about McDonald's?
Supersize Me.
They're still going to eat here because you're so nice and you're so kind and this place is so clean. You're going to be a part of that team. And those skills that you learn here are going to help you wherever you go work again. That's leadership. Mm. Okay. And that's how you build a team.
It's funny. I'm literally scrolling through his tweets and he's like, if you're working 70 hours a week, you're doing it wrong. I don't know why we glorify that. Like he has these really good principles, but basically,
why is that true?
Okay. Because he's just like, you're not maximizing what you're good at. Like if you're one, I mean, I don't know if that's exactly what he's saying, but the principle I kind of draw is like, if you're a one talent person, you don't necessarily have to acknowledge I'm a one talent person, but like just live within your gifts. You don't need to, or your boss is taking advantage of you. Or there's something wrong if you're working 70 hours a week, unless maybe you're an entrepreneur and you're in the first couple months of your company. Well, right? Here's the thing. I don't know.
Yeah, define work. I mean, because there's certain things what we want to do is, first of all, we are here on earth to be faithful. All right. And so this is so important for people to understand. Work is not a curse. When you go back and look in Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, God gave Adam and Eve. He told them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. That's a job.
Yeah.
Okay. That's Genesis 1. Okay. When did sin enter the world? Genesis what? 3. So before there was a curse and the fall, there was work to do, right? Tend the garden and love one another. That's the work. Okay. Now it got a lot harder after the fall because the earth is cursed. And because we're cursed and we don't love each other very well, so we're constantly working through conflict and we got to deal with this earth that now from our sweat of our brow, we bring it forward. Okay. But the problem is still sin. It's not work. Work is not here because of sin. It's sinful to think of work that way.
Yeah.
Okay. And so when you though, you know, what our work, our job is, to be excellent in what we do. And so we have to ask ourselves, okay, if I'm working 70 hours at commerce activity, okay, I don't think there's nothing in the Bible that says you should only work a 40-hour week. What I would tell you is there's a lot in the Bible about the things that we ought to be doing. And most guys that are working 70 hours are not focused, okay, on family and relationships and advancing the gospel. They're just they're not serving the man. They're serving the man themselves to try and build for themselves some empire.
But I think also like if you're working, let's like take it, because then I'm like, okay, practically, like I bet you you worked way more than 70 hours when you were at Watermark and you were doing, you were doing God glorifying things.
Yeah. Right?
And so how do you balance that? Let's talk directly today, to the church person. How do you balance work-life balance? Because that can get really hard for ministry people.
Yeah.
So like, how do you, like I since leaving, I mean, I did 2 years of full-time ministry.
Right.
And since leaving, I've been like, business is a joke. Like it's easy.
It's so much easier.
You clock out at five yes. and you go home and you're not worried about it, somebody calling you because something tragic happened or you're not carrying any weight.
Yeah.
I mean, you may like, right. Like I have a fiduciary responsibility to my investors. I think about that a little bit.
Yeah. But
like,
you as an owner, but it's different, right?
Right.
Because that's why, you know, I used to tell my staff, right. That on the church that, hey guys, I don't want to hear about, you know, a 40 hour work week, right? We'll get the job done and we are here to serve and love people. I'm never going to ask you to sacrifice your relationship with Christ to be a servant of Christ. So you better love your family. Right. I remember, I mean, there's a famous story that JP, you know, who worked for me says that early in his days, Todd walked into his office and he said, man, how's your ministry doing? And he starts giving me numbers about his young adult ministry and things that he's doing and leaders that he's got and all this different stuff. And I said, no, buddy. I go, we've had this conversation. And I grabbed a picture of Monica and his kids. And I said, how's your ministry doing? That's your first ministry. You got to be great there. Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm never going to ask you to lay your family on the altar of ministry. And praise God that young man, you know, he's not young anymore, but continues, I think, to prioritize his family. I was so proud of him. You know, I talked to him last week and I called him on a Wednesday and I go, where are you? He goes, I'm in a car driving my boy Weston down right now to a museum that we're going to go to as part of his school field trip. Like that guy that everybody wants to be somewhere right now, you know where he is? The spot where only Weston's daddy can be in a car with him, loving him, investing in his boy. Mm. Okay. Now let me tell you something, JP, I bet you in that instance, like me, I bet he's working 60, 70 hours a week right now. All right. But part of his job is to be his primary job is to cultivate an intimate relationship with Christ. His job is to love his wife, love his kids. That's why, you know, I mean, that's why I was there for all of your games and all your different stuff. I just told my elders, you're going to get more of me. I'm going to work harder than anybody at Watermark, okay, because I care about what we're building here. But I'm not going to do it at the expense of my family, which was a really good idea because that Watermark family is not there anymore, but my family is. And so, and I'm really glad that that while I was there, I'm very proud of what I did and how I led and how I hired and how I, you know, made it a great place to work. But I'm even more glad that I didn't do that by sacrificing my family the way so many people do. Mm-hmm. And so you, no matter what your job is, we're talking about ministry here because for ministry, so this is a long way to say this. I used to tell our staff, right? Hey, I don't want to hear about a 40-hour work week because everybody that is part of this ministry here that we are here. Now, this is very ministry specific, but there's going to be some application. We are here to not do the works of service that people go, you guys are amazing. I used to always say, we're not a circus where the best performers come on staff. All right. We're a clown school where the best people here are here to train and equip people to clown, right? To bring people joy in the kingdom, if you will. Mm-hmm. Okay. We are here to equip the saints for the work of service. Now we did have a big, you know, not a big, but we had an administrative staff who made sure things were working well so that everything else could work and could go because the body is out there doing what? They're working their 40-hour jobs already. And we expect them to show up to volunteer on Sunday mornings for kids, to greet people, to lead re-engage, right? To do regen, to be a part of the leadership team with Merge, do all these different things. That's their 40 plus. Mm-hmm. So if my staff goes, hey, you know, I've got to be here tonight, I go, just like everybody else who has a job. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm going to give you some flexibility. If you know, unlike these people who can't maybe leave for an hour and a half to go do something, you can. But also, you know, when you're on staff at a church, you don't just go there on Sunday. You're leading and you're doing stuff. So people would go, hey, if the service starts at 9, we got to be here at 7:30 to set some things up. Right. So I'm not just gathering with the saints on Sunday. I'm working on Sunday. So that's 5 hours. Shall I get Friday off? I go, look at man, you know, you're expecting everybody else to come here on Sunday. So what I'm telling you is your work-life balance ought to be at Watermark. It's probably 50, 60 hours a week before you even think about telling me you're doing overtime. All right. But I'm not going to tell you you got to be here 8 to 5. I'm going to tell you you got to do your job, that we got to serve the saints. You got to be excellent in what we're doing. And then you got to volunteer and be a part of serving volunteers by being here beyond your 40 hours a week. How arrogant of what in this American church where we have church workers, they only have to work 40 hours a week, but everybody that works 40 hours a week has to come volunteer those extra 10 to 12. That's crazy. So that's why I would just say, I don't count hours. I count faithfulness. Yeah. Is the body being served by the church staff? Yeah. Or are they always looking for them? Like, why don't you guys ever answer the phone? You know, you guys, you know, you guys, everybody gets off Friday. That's nice. Well, it's because we work on Sundays. Yeah, you work on Sundays.
I know a guy, a lot of my friends, or a couple of my friends are now working for JP down in Waco. Mm-hmm. And another guy who worked for you, Joe Daly, is really, I think, day-to-day running that team. And I know a lot of my buddies, you know, we go to the ranch every New Year. And they're, last year, they were back for Sunday because it was their job. And that's where they're at. And like Joe, I think the thing I was really driving towards is Joe has told a couple of my friends is like performance improvement plan. Like, hey, yeah, we're doing ministry. Yeah, you're the youth pastor, but you need to respond to emails in less than 24 hours. Like,
for sure.
You need to let people know, because it can be easy to get a little lackadaisical with that in that world. But okay, sorry, shifting a little bit. Again, 2 to 3 year or 1 to 2 year resumes. I think one of the best things you did at Watermark was hire talented people, like I said, and people who, like JP, who can go and lead other churches.
Yeah, but I will say this. At Watermark, my staff didn't leave.
That's what I'm saying. So that's the question is what Nick Huber says at the end of that tweet is he goes, 90% of the people I hire have other jobs because that's where the good workers are. And so when you're looking at a resume now, you know, are you really looking at how long have you been at jobs? Or are you looking at, I'm just looking at like your, like it's a similar thing. I'm looking at what you're producing and I want you on my team and I'm going to keep you on my team, whether it's because it's the best work environment, mm-hmm. the best pay, the best benefits, or a combination of all three or two of the three, you know, however it is, you want to keep the best employees.
Yeah, absolutely. And when I said my folks didn't leave, people go, well, that was your problem is you didn't send out people. We send out people all the time.
Right.
But they didn't leave because it was a growing organization. They were sent out because the organization was growing and they were growing with it. And there was opportunity and there was community and there was relationship and there was.
But it was the last thing they wanted to do was leave.
Right. Because they were valued and because they were given opportunity and they were growing and they were. I used to tell people, I can stay somebody for a long time if three things are happening. All right. Number one, my gifts are being used. Number two, my gifts are being developed. Number three, my gifts are being affirmed. And I tell people, if those three things are happening, you should never leave. All right. That's the job. That's the way you look at it. And if those things aren't happening, if your gifts aren't being affirmed, they ought to get rid of you.
Yeah.
Okay. If your gifts aren't being developed, you ought to say, hey guys, you know, some people might say this isn't a development job, which I think I can't imagine a job that's not development. If you don't give people clear feedback on their work and give them an opportunity to grow in their resourcefulness and usefulness and utility, that's just bad leadership. Okay? And then if you're someplace where you feel like, hey, I'm not really using the gifts that God's given me, then I would tell you, I mean, first of all, sometimes every work is it's a job. Not mm-hmm. everything is fun. You can tell people this. You start, you know, Patmos and you got other companies. I've got stuff that I'm starting right now. It's work, man. And so everything isn't life-giving and everything isn't fun.
Right.
It's just stuff you got to do.
Right. Not every real estate meeting is an investor meeting that's on a golf course. Not every ministry meeting is a coffee at your favorite coffee shop. I mean, you got to respond to the email in 24 hours.
Bro, it's
a
grind. Yeah. People, you know, it, and so you got to do your job. And so as a lawyer, you know, not everything is, well, let me say this. I talked to my friend Gary Haugen, right? Who runs International Justice Mission. And Gary, everybody wants Gary to come speak because there's these exciting moments where they go on these raids and they rescue these kids and they get bad guys and they film them and they show them at their fundraisers. And Gary says, listen, that is not our job. We spend hours in administrative and legal details that nobody ever sees. Like this podcast, bro, right? We're just sitting here. You know how much work goes into guys that'll edit this and produce it and put it together and all this different stuff? And that's work. There's work you just don't see. I mean, Michael, JD, Katie, all these folks, are gifted at what they do. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of their job they love. Like right now, they're like, wow, they're sitting here getting to hear Cooper and Todd talk, which people might think is boring and it would be a terrible job. But you're the one listening to the podcast. Okay. But there's going to be.
So you should be a silent quitter and get off.
Yeah.
But, and leave a comment. Let us know.
But yeah, don't even bother. But just, I just think, you know, what I'm saying is every job has an aspect to it where like, this is the grind. This is the deadline. This is when I got to get the job done. Okay. And so I don't think when you say that I'm in my giftedness, that it means that everything I'm doing is just downhill with a wind at my back.
Right. If I'm best with people, you're not always with people.
That's right.
You gotta get stuff done.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, I mean, yeah, I guess any other principles to, I think a guy like me, when you really, I'm like trying to think about practically, I don't know why I keep going back to like you're looking at the resume or I guess. Oh, now,
you, okay, yeah, I didn't really answer your question. Like, which is what do I see somebody who is in every job for a year or two?
Yeah. Does that worry you? Or are you just, hey, I'm going to ask the question. I'm going to figure out why. And if it's, well, that company offered me 200K because I added value. And then they offered me 300K because I added value.
Right.
And now you're offering me 400. So I'm going to leave them.
Yeah.
And it's like, and if they offered me 400, I'd stay.
Yeah.
Is that, I mean, is it as simple as that?
I think you're exactly right. Yeah. I mean, I would not look at, you might find some people that are same job for 40 years and that should really concern you because they're not motivated to ever grow, improve, or change. You might find somebody who leaves a job every 6 months or 2 years and you're like, why? Yeah. Right? So I think the why.
Yeah.
And so I like the phrase, you know, I don't really measure, you know, watering schedules. I measure fruit. Right. Don't tell me how often you water the lawn. I'm just saying, you know, is the grass green?
Yeah.
Right. So I don't care how long you mow. Does the grass look like it should? So there's good reasons to leave every 6 months, every year. Okay. There's really terrible reasons.
Right.
Okay. What are your reasons?
Right.
Help me understand this. And then I better pick up the phone and call those people and go, this is what they told me. Is that true? Okay.
Yeah. So I think if you have a lesson I'm thinking of like, is if you have a valuable employee, keep them. Whatever means possible. If you want to go get, if you see a valuable employee, go get them. And then if there's somebody that, I guess the last thing I'm trying to think of is like, let's say you have somebody that you see the potential, or maybe a guy like JP, right? And it's maybe a bad example because his was specifically, you saw something in him other people didn't see. But if you have a guy that is, you see what he's capable of, but he's not living in it. And maybe you hire him because you see what he's capable of, what does that look like? Are you just investing a lot of, you're committing to yourself. Part of your job is now, I'm going to invest a lot of time.
Yeah. I mean, people are, to me, look, I love to develop people. I mean, I'm so grateful.
But it's a job.
It's a job,
that's,
right?
That's like, yeah, that's a job.
I mean, but I don't hire a completely incompetent, unmotivated person just to prove how much I can develop people. Right. I mean, I also,
there's got to be something you're driving towards.
Well, I like to hire gifted people too.
Yeah.
Right. So I hire gifted people, and when whoever they are, I want to see them develop. I want to see them excel still more. I want to see them get better at what they do. And that's the, I mean, I'm telling you, look, there's going to be some days where maybe the economy is what it is and we just got to go out. I mean, think about a farmer. Mm-hmm. Okay. So a farmer, who's motivating the farmer? End of the day, who is it?
He's got to eat.
Stomach.
Yeah.
And say, and you got to go bust dirt, man. You got to be a dirt buster. Okay. And you got to deal with weather patterns that are unpredictable. Okay. You got to deal with predators and disease, and it is work. Mm-hmm. And so you might go, were there scholars who were farmers back in the day in a largely agrarian society? Yeah. So we live in a information techno society right now where there's more jobs that a light of a cup of coffee and a laptop, right? And you can cheat some of there, but that's what I'm saying is that's an integrity problem. And you don't want to be that guy.
Yeah.
I think, but there was a day where the smartest people in the world, everybody pretty much lived the exact same way. You just worked your butt off.
Yeah.
And then you read at night under a candle and then you wrote poetry or whatever you did. Okay. Or you looked at the stars and you advanced, you know, the world in some form, but everybody, man, it was an agrarian society. Mm-hmm. And there's just an aspect where there's certain things you just got to do.
Yeah.
Everybody has to do it.
If you were going back with me.
Yeah.
Now, like seeing where, let's imagine I don't have this job and if you're going back or if you're a parent now sitting a kid, it's 18, that's not a basketball player, that's not getting a scholarship,
mm-hmm.
but like just, what would you do? I mean, seeing where the world's trending, I don't see many farmers out there. Maybe it's, that's a generational thing, a lot of families, but like, are you sending a kid to college to get a degree in general business marketing, whatever? Or are you like, hey man, if I'm you, I would go learn the trades or something, because that, I mean, if you pick up the phone, try to call an AC repairman in the summer, okay, you're not getting it.
So I knew even when I sent you to college, I knew that what you were going to learn, okay, up at the Sam Walton School of Business, University of Arkansas.
Yeah, nothing.
Okay.
Oh, that was my own fault.
Well, but I knew, even if you were the most attentive student up there,
yeah,
I knew that what you were going to learn in their marketing classes and their accounting classes was not going to ultimately be the thing that made you successful. Okay. What was going to make you successful is that you had a job, which was to go to class consistently, to look at the syllabus and do what the professor asked you to do, not wait till a panicked late November after Thanksgiving and try and cram and get an acceptable grade, but that you were going to learn discipline, responsibility, and execution. Mm-hmm. And that you were going to be moral and do the work of an evangelist with your dorm mates, your fraternity brothers, and your friends. You were going to date nobly and responsibly. And you would do that with independence. Do you remember what you kept telling your mom and I your senior year again and again and again? I can't wait to get out of here to show you that I don't need you to be the man that you think that I'm not. Some effect of that, right? And I'm like, buddy, I can't wait. That's been the whole program all along, mm-hmm, is for you to go and prosper without my management.
Right.
Okay. And so, you know, you've been so humble with your story about how you went up there and you realized, man, this is harder than I thought to make myself do what I said I was up here to do.
Right.
Okay. And so,
It's like a classic story of, I mean, this is probably to employees. Like for me as a college student, it was hiking trails 15 minutes from campus everywhere I looked. And I was hiking every day and having fun with friends and outdoors because I'd lived in Dallas. Now I'm in
Fayetteville. Discipling kids.
Yeah.
Doing
K-Life. Well, I was doing a lot of stuff, but I think there's always something.
But what was your job?
School. And that's the question I think I was driving towards on that's the other why with employees switching jobs. It's like, why did you go to class? If it's like, well, because, and there's a legitimate reason, you're gonna be like, okay. But it's like, well, I went and hiked Whitaker Point that day and I did this one that next day. And it could,
you love people. You have people skills. So I'm gonna tell you, had you gone up there and you'd been at class on time, gotten straight A's and been an honor student in Arkansas, and you were immoral, selfish jerk, I'd have pulled my support of you, because your job was to go up there and be a light, right? I told you, I'm sending you out as a missionary to Fayetteville. And I'm sending you out as a workman, okay? And I think I gave you this illustration. I said, bro, you know what? Everybody likes to work. I go, it's like you're an employee at Home Depot. And everybody wants to work at Home Depot because of you. You're the most popular guy in the break room. People want to be on your shift. The problem is you're not stocking any shelves, okay? Everybody loves you. But right now your job isn't to love the employees. Your job is to stock shelves, say hi to customers, and you got to be there when you're supposed to be there.
Right.
So I don't care that everybody loves you. You're not doing your job. Now, if you're doing your job and nobody loves you because you're a jerk, you're not doing your job either. So it's not an either or, it's a both and. Mm-hmm. And so the biggest thing you learn in college, and is it worth $120,000 in 4 years of your life? Probably not. Okay. You're going to be an engineer, an architect. You're going to be, you know, with certain hard sciences. You've got to learn certain things. Is college the best way to learn it? I don't really think it is. Okay. Anymore. And so, but you're learning a trade. I don't care if your trade is surgery. You got to find some system to learn that. And in ours, the way we do it with MCATs and medical schools and, you know, organic chemistry and all this stuff, they make you go through certain things. But I promise you, there's other ways to learn that stuff other than the formal education system. But our society has embraced the formal education system. So if you want to go, you want to work at HVAC, you got to go get accredited by people. Our state legislators said you got to be accredited.
Right.
All right. So there are guys that maybe aren't going to go through that. They could just sit on somebody's hip and learn it. All right. And that guy might not be sanctioned by the state to teach you, so you can't do it, but you're great at it.
Yeah.
And so I'm all about, let's be great at it. Because a lot of our trade system and trade schools and all that different stuff and bar associations, you know, aren't even doing a great job. I certainly don't think because you have a degree that you're going to be somebody about that's
it's your
in fact, and I said this all the time at Watermark, I don't really care if you... If you went to seminary, I won't necessarily hold it against you. In other words, I mean, the easiest thing for me to teach you is theology and how to study your Bible. The hardest thing for me to teach you to do is love God and love others. So I'm not going to hold it against you if you got a seminary degree and you know Hebrew and Greek. Okay. Just don't come to me and think I should hire you because you got a degree. I want to know, do you know personal responsibility? Do you know discipline? Do you know diligence? Are you faithful? Do you love God? Do you love others? Are you humble? I can work with that. Mm-hmm. So what you learn at college, I had this conversation with your brother the other day. I said, dude, I don't use calculus in my job. Okay. You might be a lawyer one day. You won't use a lot of calculus, depending, unless you're in certain kind of, patent law or whatnot. But all I'm just saying is that what you're learning is to do your job. And that's the hardest thing for people to learn. So whatever job you've got an opportunity to show up and know that early is on time and on time is late. Right? That when you get your job done, you know what to do, that you don't just go, I can chill now. You look around, how can I help others? I used to tell people this at Watermark all the time, is, man, hey, there's opportunity everywhere. Who's going to pick it up? And the guys that picked it up and did it got advanced and got poured into. And so you want to be a man that when they look at you, they go, that dude is committed to excellence and faithfulness wherever he is. He prospers, others around him prosper, and he's kind, and he gets the job done. And so I think that's what you learn at college. Okay. But if you go to college and all you come out of there with is an addiction, a disease, right? And you're an expert in decadence and some paper degree, it's worthless.
Yeah.
If
you were a business, would you start finding roles that you can hire kids at 18 on when they're more green? And teach them.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm thinking about like an analyst position.
Let me say
this. You could teach a kid Excel in a couple of days.
Yes, you could. Yeah. Yes, you could. And I think that just look out in Silicon Valley. That's what they're starting to do. They're getting the smartest kids out of high school and they're saying, hey, you don't need to go to Cal Berkeley. Come work here for us at YouTube.
Don't spend $70,000. We'll pay you $70,000.
We'll pay you $70,000. We'll develop you. We'll teach you. You want to do, I had a conversation yesterday with a guy and a young man who wants to go into ministry. And I just told him, I said, I go, you don't need a seminary degree. And frankly, most of the church are going to hire because they have a seminary degree you don't want to work for. I can teach you what you want to learn if you want to come work with me. And I go, I'll teach you theology. I'll teach you how to use the language tools that are in there. Now, listen, if you're going to be a professor, okay, I need you to go get more training than I can give you. If you want to be an expert on Second Temple Judaism, and I go, I'm not going to teach you a bunch of that. And I can show you what to read. Right. If you need a formal structured learning environment to be motivated to learn, then go get you a formal structured learning environment. Right. But I'll put you on a path. Yeah. That'll be great. And you don't need a degree. But most people are like, really? I think I'm supposed to get a degree. Is it legal for me to do this without a degree? I'm like, yes. Not only is it legal, it's more probable, frankly, because the people that get a degree and stop learning are not really worth hiring. So look, great men don't need structure. Great men put structure in their life. Okay. And if you're not yet a great man, then you better get in some structure where you're going to be accountable. It's why I'm a fan. And I wish every 18-year-old didn't get to go to college. And I wish every 18-year-old didn't come to work for me. I wish they'd go in our military where they were told when to go to bed, when to get up, how to keep physically fit, how to say yes, sir, how to work with others. Okay. How to do a job to serve their country and protect our freedoms. And then be reintroduced back into society. Because everybody, before you can lead, you got to follow. And you got to learn to take orders and do hard things. So, yes, if I was king, I would do everything I could to put at least everybody through a 12-week boot camp, if not 2 years of service.
Yeah. Love it. Well, that was helpful to me. I think if you're a business owner or an employee and you have more questions on that stuff, podcast at 1613projects.com.
Yeah, send us your questions. We'd love to talk more about it.